Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Bog right here on Dave Martell YouTube channel. If you like The Bog, you support The Bog, make sure you go to patreon.com/The Bog and sign up. There's a tier for everybody, $5 all the way up to $50. And you can get a hat, you can get a sticker, you can get all kinds of stuff. There's dresses for the ladies and onesies for the babies. Winners here, go get yourself a beanie, get yourself a Bog hoodie, all kinds of stuff over there at shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop, all kinds of stuff. So if you want to help us keep the lights on, there's two ways to do it right there. If you want to support a friend of ours, make sure you go to facebook.com/ironagejodish and check out some authentic Vedic astrology. It's really, really cool stuff. Good stuff over there. Mr. Neil John, if you decide to get a reading, make sure to tell him Big Dave sent you. And then final plug, Bizarrechives issue 2 is out now. I forgot to put the graphic up. We got the Cosmic Horror double feature up there, which is doing really, really well. Folks are loving that thing, man. I'm telling you guys, that book kills it. It's great. A. Cuthbertson is just... the reviews on it are just unbelievable. Some of the stuff folks are saying about it. The reception has been wonderful. Blessings and thanks to everybody that picked up a copy. But issue 2 is out now as well. And speaking of issue 2, I got a little something to show you guys. Check this out. Pretty cool, right? Pretty cool little bumper there. So go over to thebizarrechives.com and pick yourself up a copy. Full interior art from the mighty Don Kent and all kinds of stuff. But, man, we got a lot to talk about tonight. Tristan and Andre are not with me. Both of them were attacked and abducted by ninjas. So that's what Tristan wanted me to tell you guys. The truth is that they both have little coldsies. Because they're bitch made with their little pussy boy immune systems. That's why they're not here. Yeah, unlike Big Dave, who's sitting here strong. You know, 220 pounds of Pennsylvania steel. And then another 30 pounds of, like, calzones and sauerkraut. Hail from Florida. Hail Revolt. Hail AH. Hail Volkstark. Hail CM. Hail everybody. Appalachian Nationalist. Hail everybody. So, tonight we have a pretty big topic to talk about. It's just me and you, but we're gonna talk about it. And this is the idea of hypermodernity. Hypermodernity, hyperrealism, what these things mean, what they entail, the epoch that we are currently living in, and so on and so forth. So we're gonna talk about that tonight. So let's get started with it. And before we can get into what hyperrealism is and what hypermodernity means, we have to kind of go through what modernity means and what postmodernity means and what these things are and were. So I guess we could get started with modernity. What does modernity mean? And we say this word a lot in our spheres. It is subject to quite a bit of scrutiny and criticism. You know, reject modernity, return to tradition, these types of things. This is, and, you know, these are good sentiments to have. I share these sentiments. But when we say modernity, a lot of times in the memes, the meaning and the nuance gets lost a little bit. Modernity refers specifically to the epoch of industrialization. It refers specifically to the age of industry, the age of, like, around World War I, World War II, and then going into, I guess you could say, the 70s and stuff, before the nuclear age, going into the nuclear age and before the information age. And this was called modernity. This was modernism. This is when kind of the technosphere, the mechanurge really, really expanded. This is when we kind of left behind the old world. We left behind monarchies and kings and queens. We left behind true republics. We left behind the feudalism and agrarian lifestyle. We left behind the old world, and we got into the world of capitalism. We got into the world of communism. We got into the world of fascism. We got into the world of all of these modern the ideologies and social orders of the modern epoch. All three that I have mentioned, which I guess you could say are first, second, and third position, are first, second, and third position within modernity. They are predicated on industrialism. They're predicated on our common modern understanding of nation or a nation state, of how the countries came to be drawn. They are, you know, the ideas and the social orders of modernity, of the time where we started to develop cars and fossil fuels and factories and manufacturing and so on and so forth, a little bit before globalization, which is something that happened in modernity, but really, really took root in post-modernity. Volk says the Mechanurge is the bringer of Kali Yuga. I would agree with that. The Mechanurge, for those of you that aren't familiar, let's kind of open up the Martellian lexicon a little bit. Mechanurge is a term that I've coined to talk about the amalgamate of technological society, because I believe that the amalgam of all of technology has will. It has will. It is conscious, but not conscious as we understand consciousness. So in order to understand the Mechanurge, you have to understand emergent systems, right? You have to understand the system, the idea of emergence, this idea of multiplicity being a law of nature. Multiplicity is in all things. There's no such thing as a singularity. Everything is in multiplicity. And everything is a system of expanding multiplicities. That everything is cooperated. Everything is interconnected. Everything is informed by something that preceded it. Everything, think of it like a snowball, right? When you roll a snowball down a mountain, it rolls and rolls and rolls and rolls and gets real, real big until it can no longer support itself. And then it breaks apart into a bunch of little snowballs that roll down the hill and get bigger and bigger and bigger until they all get too big and they break apart and on and on and on forever and ever and ever. And that's kind of the law of emergence. It is a cyclical metamorphosis. It is this idea that all of reality is governed by these laws. And when we understand that the laws of nature apply to all things, it also applies to man-made things. It's like the Earth has inertia and gravity and so on and so forth. If you make a man-made thing, for example, I have a lighter right here in my hand. When you chuck the lighter, just because it's a man-made thing does not mean that it is outside of the laws of nature. If I hurl it, it has a trajectory, it has inertia, it will eventually hit the earth because of gravity, so on and so forth. These laws cannot be escaped. That is just how reality is. So if we understand that reality, the laws of reality, apply to all things within reality, within imminent reality, then we must also apply this to man-made things being technology. So if you think about an emergent system is a system from top to bottom of many, 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 I don't want to say countless, obviously they are countable, but it is not countable. You know, it's so many that it's beyond our ability to count. So look at the human body, look at a computer, look at any sort of machine or anything, right? When you look in the mirror, you see a singular you, right? You see you. However, you is given you-ness by that is a construct. You are a construct, which, by the way, constructs are a good thing. Constructs, social constructs, are things that we use to make sense of our reality. It is differential ontology. We apply uniqueness and titles and names to things that have discernible differentiating qualities. These things are good and meaningful. That's why I don't get into the race. Race isn't a social construct. Race, blah, blah, blah. Race is a social construct, but you know what? Social constructs are good and meaningful and useful. Just because it's a social construct does not mean that it's not real. So this is kind of, by engaging in that argument, you are seeding ground that social constructs, that man does not have the ability to apply constructs to things, that man does not have the ability to give objective meaning to reality. And that is the whole purpose of postmodernism, is to remove objective reality, to remove and deconstruct and break down and destroy man's ability to make sense of reality. So when you even engage in that argument of whether or not race is a social construct, you are seeding ground. When you say, no, race isn't a social construct, what you're saying by omission is that social constructs are fake and that they don't have meaning and they're not real. That's what the postmodernists want you to say. So what the correct argument to that, to race as a social construct, is yes, and that is a good thing. Social constructs are good, meaningful, objective things. Everything is a social construct. So anyway, getting back onto this thing about the emergent system. When you look in the mirror, you look in the mirror and you see you, and that is a construct, right? That is effectively kind of an illusion. There is no singular you. There is a multiplicity of many cooperating elements that go in to make you. But in order for your mind to make sense of that, you just see, hey, yo, that's Dave. What's up, Dave? You know, I see that in the mirror. That's just me, you know? But the truth of the matter is that on a spiritual, metaphysical level, I'm many, many different elements. You have my consciousness, parts of my consciousness. You have parts of my soul. You have parts of my body. And then just my body is made up of different organs that work in cooperation, which are made out of different cells that are in cooperation, made out of different atoms that are made out of cooperation. And this is just this big, giant, cooperating thing, right? So when we get into technology is no different. All of technology is an emergent system going all the way back to the first piece of technology, whatever that may be, right? It could be, you know, some hairy weirdo smashing a nut open with a rock. Could be anything, right? Going back all the way to that first thing, all technology is this branching out of, emergent systems. It is a cooperative, whether you see it or not. Your toaster is in cooperation with your Wi-Fi, with your refrigerator, with your car. All of technology is a series of emergent systems. And all of technology works the way technology does. Technology is not just the physical machine that you look at. Technology is a culmination of technique put into praxis in reality, in material reality. So the machine is not necessarily the technology. The technology is the technique behind the machine, what the machine does. And what machines do, what technology does, is it makes things more efficient. It makes everything more efficient. And technology that does not make things more efficient fails, right? This is effectively the mechanurge. All of these things, all together with this will, this force to push forward into making things more efficient, is the mechanurge. It has will. It has will to replicate itself. It has will to become better at its task. It has will to expand. It has will to drive itself into being more efficient at its task. This is what the mechanurge is. And I go a little bit further, and I say, AH says social construct is something constructed from the interaction of two or more things. So essentially everything is a social construct. That's correct. And social constructs are good and meaningful and useful. Nobody would say, like for example, I'm holding up my water bottle. It's called water bottle. Like that is a practical, useful, objective thing. This is objectively a water bottle. It is a bottle that holds water. And if we didn't have a name for this thing, it would be retarded, right? Social constructs are good. social constructs are meaningful, and without them, we would have a confusing gobbledygook of a reality to deal with. And that's what postmodernists want. They want to break down reality so that we don't have any objectivity within it. We don't have the power to name and discern it, and therefore can push us into hyper-reality, which is what we're going to talk about in a minute. So, back to the Mechanurge. So, that effectively is what the Mechanurge is. So I go a step further, and this is where some people break off with me, but I thoroughly believe it because, you know, I mean, I'm a spiritual guy. I'm a creative guy. I tend to think abstractly in some ways. But the Mechanurge, I believe, has a consciousness applied to it via our collective belief. We have believed the Mechanurge so hard. We've believed in technology so hard that it has created an entity, right? It has created an entity. Not an entity like we would understand it, maybe not a personage, maybe not something that can talk and speak and have conscious thoughts. Because consciousness is unique to humans only. Consciousness is something that only humans have. You know, animals don't have consciousness, at least not human consciousness. Human consciousness is only unique to humans. The Mechanurge cannot have specific human consciousness, but it is an entity nonetheless. It has will nonetheless, and that is the Mechanurge, and it brings about this age of you know, effectively the Kali Yuga, in my opinion. So when we get into kind of the effect and the march of the Mechanurge pushing us into these different epochs, and these epochs kind of pulling ourselves, you know, a lot of this is our own doing, right? A lot of this is our own doing. And some people would argue that the moment that the first caveman tied a rock to a stick is when, like, the Mechanurge or the technosphere was born. I mean, I wouldn't go that far, but effectively, I believe that through our collective belief in the Mechanurge, and here's how we know that the Mechanurge, that the worshippers of the Mechanurge, which are going to be people that believe in scientism, people that believe in you know, the husks, right? The denizens of the machine, the postmodernists, the leftists, the weirdos. These guys, you could tell that they, here's one phrase that they say: trust the science. Trust the science is a prayer to the Mechanurge, because the science is not a thing. The science is not some, they treat science as if it is this monolithic entity to be obeyed. They treat, when they say the science, they mean the abstraction. They mean the entity from which they take their orders, which is the machine itself. So when they do this, they give power to it. They worship it. They obey it. Science is just like a system, right? Science is just like a way of figuring out empirical data. That's what science is. It's not anything. I mean, I'm not going to try to say anything good about science, because I say science is gay, because it is gay. But what science is supposed to be used for is to study, discern, and make sense of empirical physical data. It's not, you know, this thing to be worshipped and obeyed. Yet it is being treated like that. They don't actually worship science, because, you know, we have scientific data that they hate, right? It breaks their narrative, and they'll fight it every day. You could show them all the evidence in the world, and they'll still stomp and scream and get you banned and yell at you and hate you for bringing it up. Why? Because the science is code word for the Mechanurge, for the machine. Trust the science means, like, obey our God. And their God is the Mechanurge. So, I believe that this amalgamate of machines and technology as a whole is has will. I believe that it is cooperative. I believe it is an emergent system. I believe that it has influence in this world. I believe that the next step is, you know. So when we get into modernity, right? Modernity was the time where people like kind of turned away from the gods, or turned away from God, turned away from divinity, and began to place themselves on the throne of God. This is where we get humanism. This is where we get postmodernism, which was informed by Enlightenment and liberalism. They put themselves, man in his condition becomes upon the throne of God. Well, the Mechanurge, which is a very Promethean, a very demonic force, is going to give man the next enlightenment, right? There's going to be transhumanism. This is when man kind of, where technology gives man the gift to outpace the shackles of nature and take on his next form, his next evolution. Then he gets to place himself truly and become a god. It's this kind of really abominable apotheosis that he so desires. He's going to be there. And then what happens after that? The machine becomes God. And that's where we're at now. That's where we're going. Hyper-reality. So, let's take a step back, because we kind of went on a tirade there. So, when we get back to modernity, we fleshed out what modernity was. And here's the thing. Let's throw some stuff out there about how destructive modernity truly was. We say things like, and also this kind of push to get us into a time, an epoch where we are unshackled from nature. This kind of revolutionary revolt against nature has been going on for a long, long time. You know, go look back to the French Revolution. They were addled with this stuff, and this is a long time ago. French Revolution is when they came out with the metric system. It's when they actually had a metric system for like clocks and calendars. They had a whole metric thing. They wanted to completely get rid of these things. Why is metric system like proto postmodern? Because it doesn't have anything concrete that it's based off of. It's just an abstraction. Fives and tens. It's just 0, 5, 10. It's just an abstraction. It's not tied to anything in reality. Whereas imperial system is tied to things in reality. A foot is based off of the king's foot. It's based off of a thing in real life. Concrete, tangible, real life things. As kind of confusing and kooky and like unorganized as it may be, it's attached to tangible, concrete, real-life things. You know? A stone. Like, in America, we don't say stones, but in England, they still say, oh, that weighs 40 stone. You know why they say it weighs 40 stone? Because there's a roundabout idea about how much a stone weighs. It's based off of stones in real life. It's based on tangible, concrete things that we interact with and we know that are real. The metric system is not based on that. The metric system is an abstraction that has no attachment to reality. And they wanted to do that to the calendar. The calendar is like some, you know, it's some Roman stuff, right? It's, you know, days of the week, the calendar, all of these things are named after deities. They're named after real, tangible things that have inherent value that people believe in. Named after deities. They're named after the moon and the sun. Days of the week are named after the Germanic gods. You know, these were things that had cultural, inherent value, tangible, true things. And they wanted to get rid of that. The clock. What is the clock? The clock is based off of the sun. It's based off of a sundial. When you say it's 5 o'clock, that means it's fifth position on the sundial from where the sun is in the sky. It's based off of the sun. Real, tangible, real-world things. You know what I mean? So when we get into modernity and then moving into post-modernity, let's look at the art. So modern art is reductionist. It's not deconstructionist. It's reductionist. It's you know, like your Andy Warhols, even like Ezra Pound was a hardcore modernist. I know he's kind of based, and he wrote some really good stuff. He was a modernist. He truly was. T.S. Eliot, Robert Frost, these guys. The philosophy of modern art was, we don't need all this, you know, frilly, filigree, decorative words. We don't need all this alliteration and kind of as they considered them to be, superfluous extras. We just need to do our art, reduce it down to its basic core, and that's good, right? Whereas romantic and ancient art is like, let's make this as extra as possible. Let's make this as extravagant and powerful as possible. Because they believe that there were holy elements to alliteration. You know, they understood that poetry was the language of the gods. They understood that these had holy, divine elements to them. You know, the poetry was... To write a poem was to write in the language of the gods. It had meter, it had formulas, it had this and that. It was designed to be decorative. Because when you interact with the divine, you dress nice, you're on your best behavior, you do the best thing possible. You know what I mean? You try to impress the divine. And that is what you do when you write poetry. Well, the modernists, you know, as Nietzsche said, God was dead in that period, or at least they believed so. Didn't have that baggage, right? They at least believed so. So they eliminated all those elements. And they're like, let's break it down to just the most basic stuff. And this is where you get a lot of poetry and writing and stuff. It's, you know, this is where you get your John Steinbecks and your Ernest Hemingways and poetry about sitting and looking at the floor. And, you know, I don't mean to bag on it too much. I'm just not a fan of it. And I think The poetry of the industrial era, a lot of it is stinky, I think. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's just not, I'm not a fan. But that was the philosophy behind it. And then you get into postmodernity, where postmodernity looked at modernity and said, well, you know, you guys have boiled down everything that has meaning, and you boiled it down to just like this basic stuff. Let's deconstruct it. Instead of reduce it, let's do the next phase. Let's deconstruct it. And in postmodernity is where you get the information age. This is before the internet, but this is where you get globalism, kind of the commons of these two epochs. The commons in modernity was still the pub. It was still the bar. It was still the barbecue. It was still the YMCA. It was still places where people went and physically met in meat space. This was these were the commons, the commonplace in this epoch. When you get into postmodernity, it became globalized. This is where you get heavy globalization. This is where you get late stage capitalism. This is where everything is commodified. Everything is you, yours, this, that. And this carries into hypermodernity too, but postmodernity is like, you know, you're no longer tied to collectivism. You are no longer tied to this collective identity. This is the final culmination of liberal philosophy, of Protestant Enlightenment philosophy, where you are just an individual and you are freed from the chains of tradition and freed from the chains of everything. And everything is you, me, blah, blah, blah. And then everything is, because that is coupled with consumerism and capitalism, this is where you get, like, you know, the iPhone, the iPad, the me this, the you that, everything your way, customized to you, custom, blah, blah, blah. It's this complete just masturbatory just egoism. It's just hubris. Hubris just politicized and internalized. And this is what postmodernity was about. And it's because, and what postmodernity says is that, in order for me to be the most me I can be, I have to destroy anything that has obligations. Anything that requires me to do or be or say or have any sort of connection to anything outside of myself, that must be deconstructed. And we deconstruct it through irony. We deconstruct it through mockery. We deconstruct it through just treating it like poorly. And that is what postmodernity was about. It's about deconstruction. And this is where we get the ideas of deconstructing race, deconstructing gender, deconstructing sexuality, deconstructing everything with all these goofy, made-up, nonsense, social science bullshit. You know, you guys know exactly what I'm talking about. So that was postmodernity. So moving into hypermodernity is when things start getting pretty spooky. And this is where we kind of realize that we are fish in a fishbowl. You know, a fish can't see his bowl. And when you look at what hypermodernity is, you're like, oh, shit, I'm in a damn fishbowl. You know what I mean? So this is what hypermodernity is. Hypermodernity is modernity, but in excess, right? That's what hyper means. Hypermodernity is its core element is hyperrealism, hyperreality. Hyperreality is the point in time when the virtual world becomes more valuable to people than meat space. It is the point in time where the commons becomes virtual. The shopping mall was replaced by Amazon. The bar was replaced by Facebook, by Twitter. The YMCA was replaced by Telegram. You know, the movie theater is replaced by live streams. Virtual reality, the virtual world, virtual space becomes more valuable than meat space. And if you read, like, you know, Cyberpunk, and I've said this a bunch of times, you read books like Neuromancer and Snow Crash. Let me tell you, you read those two fiction books, they're probably more impactful than any, I don't want to say any, but they're more impactful than the overwhelming majority of political philosophy stuff you're going to read. They're going to, like, freak you out with what they imply in those stories. They're almost prophetic. William Gibson, like, predicted all of this. Everything. All of it. Go read Neuromancer. Go read Snow Crash. And in Snow Crash, one of their predictions that we're seeing, like, come to fruition now, is that in hyperreality, augmented hyperreality, which is where we're at now, property in hyperreality is going to become more valuable than real life stuff. And the way he described it was as, like, literal, like, virtual apartment buildings and virtual, like, literal property, right? Like land, virtual land. How long until Facebook Meta charges $1 million for a virtual penthouse? Why is it that NFTs are selling for $50,000? An image of a piece of art. I've never in person seen a piece of art worth $50,000. Probably in some weird inner city New York Manhattan art show, there's art that expensive. I've never seen it. I've seen tons of NFTs that people claim are that much. $50,000 I've seen. That is the point in time where property in the virtual space becomes worth more than what's in real space. Bitcoin, what's Bitcoin up to now? What's Bitcoin up to? Show me a bill, a physical bill from any country in the world that's worth as much as Bitcoin. You can't. Property in virtual space has become worth more to the people than that which is in meat space. We are in hyperreality. Here's another thing about hyperreality. In hyperreality, there is no truth. Truth cannot be discerned. We get truth cannot be discerned. We get to a point where truth is completely just whatever is cast into the virtual space by those that control it. People no longer trust their eyes and their ears and their anecdotal evidence. They no longer trust their experiences. They trust what is coming from the virtual space. They trust the mechanurge. They trust the virtual space. They don't trust you. They don't even trust what they see. How often do you get into a debate with somebody and you're like, hey, you know, I saw this. And they're like, yeah, well, we need to see the data. What's the data? Data can be faked, dude. You know, you look at these surveys and these studies and stuff like that. They just ask 10 people. Yeah, those are sample size. You go look at the details of half of these fucking scientific studies, and they don't even ask nobody. And the people they ask are fucking retards. Don't mean nothing. But they trust it. It has more value than what you saw with your own eyes. Your own family members sometimes will trust the post-truth, the fake truth, the illusionary truth, the virtual truth, more than they trust you. I've seen it. I've dealt with it. We all have. You got a cousin that's like, well, I don't know about that. You're like, dude, I saw it. It happened to me 2 freaking days ago. Well, I need to see the data. That's trust in the man. That's worship of the mechanurge. That is the time where virtual truth becomes the truth in the minds of people. It shapes people. I saw a Facebook post by a guy that I like. I actually like. His name's Master Chim. He's a pretty smart guy. He's really good with encouraging people to work out and do martial arts and stuff like that. And he's made this Facebook post. He said something along the lines of, you know, you got to get out and do stuff, and you got to build family, you got to build things, and you can't build a legacy with Facebook likes. And, you know, I mean, I agree with him, and I agree with him. But the unfortunate reality is that's just not true anymore. You can build a frickin' legacy with Facebook likes. That's the sad reality of it. I know so many people that do so much awesome real work in real community that like work their butts off and like give everything to people in real life. And they still don't matter as much as some dumb bitch e-celeb with her tits out that read one book and thinks she's smart. Nobody knows this guy's name. Her, everybody knows. And you know what? After she like disappears and quits the internet because she gets too old and ugly, her memes and her things are still going to be around, and she's still going to get mentioned. You know what I mean? Until time passes and then she's replaced by another one that's exactly like her. That's just the way that it is. Unfortunately, the unfortunate truth is that, yeah, you can build a legacy in virtual space, because to people now, what happens in virtual space is worth more than what happens in real life. And this is the black pill here. This is the black pill here. And there's no going back. You want to know how irreversible some of the effects of modernity are, of technology is? We look at communities. You know, we all want to build communities. I work tirelessly to build communities. And I'm not going to stop. I think it's not just a good action to do, but it's an obligation for us to do, a holy obligation for us to do, despite whether or not those in virtual space recognize it or not, because it's a good, true, holy action. And we put a lot of emphasis on the bad guys, the vampires, that did a lot to rip our families apart, and they did. They certainly did. Between their economic systems, between their moral subversion. Yeah, of course. We can make a big list of names. You know who nobody brings up when we talk about what really, really ripped apart the traditional community? The automobile. The automobile ruined the community. You know, this idea, this like Varg idea of going and living in a woods by yourself with your family or whatever to revolt against modernity. That's not a thing. Nobody's ever done that. You know, that is something that is available in modernity because you have a car. In the ancient time before cars, that was a death sentence. Nobody did that. You lived in like estates with small communities, closely knit in vicinity. close to each other. People used to live in giant longhouses with like hundreds of people in it. People lived close to each other in tight-knit communities. They had to. But when the automobile was invented, that wasn't needed as much. And, you know, before the 50s, when you get into like the 1920s and 30s, the car was still a luxury. The car was still a luxury. You know, it was a little too expensive. You know, only really rich people had it. And if a family did, they had one. You know what I mean? When you get into the 50s and 60s, communities started to get spread out more. This is where you start seeing suburbs. This is where you start seeing, you know, different things like that. This is where people start moving around a little bit more. But in that time, you still had the cars were gas guzzlers. If you were middle class or lower, you couldn't really afford to, you know, go too far. You could go to work. You could go to the store. You weren't going to get a job that was 2 hours away. You just weren't doing that. Couldn't afford it. Gas was too expensive. Then, you know what happened? We started getting cars with better gas mileage. Gas started getting cheaper because of the global economy. Then when you have these fuel-efficient cars with cheap gas, you can move and live and work wherever you want. The car ripped our communities apart. Because no longer were people forced to cooperate. There was no more pressures for people to live close together. Before people had cars, yeah, you lived in your community. You had your church nearby. You had your temple nearby. You had your grocery store nearby. You had everything nearby because you had to. You couldn't afford. There was no way you could go. And you went on vacation maybe once a year, but you didn't go too far. This idea of traveling all over the world or going hundreds of miles, that wasn't a thing. You went somewhere nearby because that's what you could afford. You went camping, you know? This whole, I see it all the time. I have like, you know, young ladies that I used to work with, these yuppie white girls, and they just like go to the Bahamas whenever they want, you know? I just went to the Bahamas. I just went to Key West. And they just go multiple vacations. I went hiking in Europe. Yeah, we went for like 6 months. Like, I'm probably never going to go to Europe. I'll probably never be able to afford to go to Europe. I'll probably never be able to afford to take my family to the tropics. But these people, you know, these like yuppie white girls, they just wherever they want, whenever they want. That was never a thing. You know? But going back to the idea of hyper-reality and technological society, these things, we could look at technologies as to what ripped our families apart, what ripped our communities apart. You know? We don't need women to stay home and sew and do weaving and textiles. And we don't need women to do that anymore because we could just go to the store and buy it. It's cheaper to buy it that way. There's no longer these like natural pressures to force people to do these things. People will always select convenience. People will always select comfort. And it's leading them into an irreversible change. Hyper-reality is here. It's not going away. Let's check out the chat here. Angriff, my buddy Angriff says, why would people pay anything for an NFT unless it was just like a donation, super chat, freebie bonus or something? I don't know. I don't even, like, I mean, I understand the concept of NFTs, but I'm never gonna sell one. I'm never gonna buy one. I think it's ridiculous. I don't get mad. I feel like if I sold an NFT, I would feel like a crook. And I'm not saying that, you know, it is. Maybe I just don't understand it. So folks out there that are making good money off of NFTs and there's something to it, I don't understand, maybe. That's my personal instinct on it because I'm a boomer and I'm a Luddite. Farmers had Model Ts they used even as, like, tractors, to be fair. Yeah, that's true. That's true. But being a large, like, size farmer wasn't really at that point in time, you weren't, like, really, really poor. if you were doing that, you know? So, the Model T was actually, was pretty affordable for the time. It's just not everybody could afford it. And if people did afford it, they had one. So, we are in hyper-modernity now. We are in hyper-reality now. This is the epoch. You know? And there's no going back. People aren't going to give up their cars. People aren't going to, you know... This is the problem with hypermodernity, is we might have gotten to a point where there's no going back to what is truth. Look at the news, look at the Twitter feeds, look around you. People don't believe in truth anymore. People believe in the script that is cast to them through the technosphere, through the virtual space. That's what people believe in. And that is very likely that that's what people will believe in for who knows how long. So what is the end goal? Where does this go? Well, it goes somewhere a little bit spooky. When we really get into it, it gets into some pretty spooky stuff. As I mentioned before, post-modernity and hyper-modernity, me. It's all about me. It's all about, I like things exactly how, and we see this in the younger generation. Some of the folks in the younger generation, if you notice, they are so extremely, like, persnickety and hypercritical of other people. Oh, he said that one thing I don't like. I hate him. They'll completely disregard. Like, I've seen it all the time. Like, hey, you ever check out this guy? No, I hate him. He said this. He said that one thing they don't like, and they completely throw him in the trash. And so a lot of times, it's not even something that egregious. It's just like goes against their way. Why? Because they are trained from birth to be integrated into the machine, into the virtual world where everything is customized to them. They're not used to things not being commodified. Everything is commodified to them. Everything. Even people, friendships, relationships. And it's not just, and I'm not just ripping on the younger gen. Older folks have taken this on too. The grass is always greener. Well, I'm done with that person. You know? Women just dump their husbands out of nowhere. I just want to go live a free life. Blah, blah, blah. Guys just like leave girls because they just want a better, hotter woman. You know, there was a time that you, when you married that person, that meant something. You stayed with that person. Your friends from childhood, that meant something. So you stuck around, you stuck with them. You know, I have friends all the time I think are just complete goofballs. They say the most, I don't agree with anything they say. Here's the thing about me. It's hard to understand a lot. I like having people that have really wild opinions and really wild theories that I just completely disagree with. I think that they're ridiculous. I think the ideas are ridiculous, but I like that they have them, right? I like that people have crazy ideas. I just like it. You know? If I go out in public and there's somebody that comes up and they just have some wacky, crazy theory, I'm like, yeah, I let them talk. I want to hear it. Not because I agree or not because I even like the theory, but I like that they have the theory. You know what I mean? So it's like I have friends that that I've known from child that believe some of the craziest stuff. They have these crazy arguments and ideas that are just so off the wall. I'm like, no, I don't agree with that at all. But I love those guys because they're my boys. They can... Outside of, like, really morally egregious things, they'll always be my boys. Unless they turn into troons or, like, some kind of... They start, like, wearing dresses or doing something real gross. Which modernity would, like, embrace them with open arms. Right? If they did that. But I wouldn't. That's a way to get kicked out. You turn into bog meat, you go into the bog. I'm sorry, bro. But... My boys, like, they can have whatever crazy, goofy idea, and I love them. And there's just nothing, you know, I'm not going to discard them like a McDouble wrapper
because they said one thing that does isn't completely in line. I understand that human beings are spiritual beings. I understand that my friends are spiritual beings. I understand that they're conscious beings. I understand that they have uniqueness and themness, right? That they are not beholden to what I desire them to be. They are not beholden to the script that I demand that they follow. People have a much better life if they understand this, and they kind of just accept the way that people, not accept the way, if they're like stealing and like shooting heroin into their necks and like if they're obviously egregious degenerates, no, but if people are quirky and like eccentric, and that's good in my opinion. I don't want to talk to people that are just NPCs. I don't want to talk to those people. And there's a lot of folks out there, oh, he said that one thing that I don't like. You know, it comes down to binary. This binary thought, I experience it every single day. Binary thought, mechanized mind, the propagandized mind, every single day. You say, well, this isn't, I don't agree with this. Oh, well, they just assume that you are the part of the binary. I had a guy, you know, in this conversation, in this one chat, and I'm like, you know, men, you know, modern men are like X, Y, and Z. He's like, well, women, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, dude, I didn't say that. He's like, oh, well, I thought you were. Yeah, because you assumed through binary thought, you have this little on-off toggle switch in your brain, and you're so mechanized, you are literally a computer. If it's not one, it's zero. That is your instinct because you've been mechanized. Internalized industrialization. You are mechanized by the virtual space. Everything must be commodified. Everything is black and white. Everything is binary. You know, you hear something, you got to take a step back and you got to use your spiritual mind, the human side of you, to discern and think about it and use reason. And yeah, you got to digest it and like take it in instead of just like reacting. Reactionism is just, I don't know. It's not human. It's mechanized. So, man, we're coming up on an hour already. Jeez, I've been yakking for a long, long time. So anyway, what was I even talking about? Hyperreality, hypermodernity, they're here. Yeah, there's a lot of great sources. You can just type it in and just go look up. There's a bunch of guys that talk. They're really, really smart with it and talk about it. But that's where we're living at now. How do we oppose it? I don't know. I actually do have a theory, but I don't know if it's any good. Yeah, I'll just be honest with you. I have a theory on how we oppose it, but I don't know if I'm the guy to say it. You know? I don't know if, yeah. I guess we'll talk about it someday, but we are coming up on an hour here. I hope everybody liked my hour-long rant about hypermodernity and the mechanurge. I think we're going to close it out for this evening. If you like The Bog, you support The Bog, make sure you go to patreon.com/The Bog and sign up. There's a tier for everybody. $5, all those $50, you can get a t-shirt, you can get a mug, you can get RSS feed to get audio of every single show that we listen to in your car or your commutes at work, all that stuff. Go to shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop and get yourself some sweet merch. Guys, go over to bizarreguys.com, buy some books. Leave us some reviews. We need reviews. Speaking of, I'm going to play the thing at the end, I think. I don't know. Facebook.com/IronAgeJodish. Go check out our boy Neil John. If you got Facebook, go over there, give him a like, talk to him, see what he's doing over there. If you decide to get a reading, make sure to tell him Big Dave sent you. Let him know I sent you over there. So anyway, that's going to be it for tonight, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in and coming to hang out with Big Dave, just like the old days, just me and you. And I hope you guys enjoyed this stream. I'll see you guys next time. I hope everybody had a very merry Yule, by the way. I hope everybody had a very merry Yule and New Year. I had a tough one. I'll be honest with you, I had a tough one. I got pretty sick. I had some health ailments, and just like, ugh. It was tough to get through. But we got through it. We're good now and everything like that, but you know, Merry Yule, Merry Christmas, much love to everybody, and I hope everybody has a good start to their year, and I feel good about this one. 2022 is our year. I feel good, despite it being hyper-reality and like all that shit. And also, by the way, Tristan and Andre, if you're listening, I'm just kidding in the beginning. I don't mean to call you guys little little pussy bitches, but yeah. These guys need some vitamin C and some elderberry and some zinc and all that stuff. You gotta get some sun. You gotta start getting your immune system up. All right, those guys are my boys. I love them, and much love to all you guys. And I'm gonna raise a horn to our most exalted patron. Speaking of Andre, where's my horn at, man? Oh, here we go. Raise a horn to our very own Andre and our boy Corey. Our most exalted patrons that help, because of them, we can keep the lights on. Many hails and many blessings to them. Many hails and many blessings to each and every one of you. I'll see you guys next week. Tristan and Andre will be back. Hails and blessings, everybody. Take care.